She's growing up, obviously, in a bilingual or multilingual environment, which Hong Kong is and which her home life is. So I'm always emphasizing the Cantonese because, you know, we're in Hong Kong, that's the main language. Connie's always emphasizing the English, which is obviously very important in Hong Kong too. When I put the TV on, Connie says, oh, don't put on a Cantonese show, you know, let it be exposed to English more. She gets enough Cantonese. Anyway, the other day I was sort of, she was just speaking to me like, ba ba ya ba ba, ya wa wa ya wa ba ba, just in her cute baby language. And I was just sort of speaking back to her as a joke, like, ah, but ya, oh, but ya, boo, boo, boo. And Connie said, ah, don't speak that bullshit language to her. Speak proper English. And then suddenly In the Night Garden comes on TV. And she's like, oh, this is her favorite show. Let her listen to it. It's good for English. Have you ever heard of In the Night Garden? It's very British.
No.
It's kind of taken like over Teletubbies as the sort of full of puppets and stuff for kids. But Connie's sort of saying, oh, yeah, it's really good for English. But if you actually listen to it, it's very British. Oh, the Wobbly Bobs are swimming in the Schlubbly Boo. And they are riding in the Flubbly Bub. They like the Flubbly Bub. The Schlubbly Blues are very happy. Oh, look, it's Mr. Tinkertock. He is sitting in a Strubbly Dub. It is Anime Pacific, episode 99.
Very exciting. Just like Wayne Gretzky, number 99 of the Edmonton Oilers fame. Yes.
Now, I've made many Wayne Gretzky mentions on the podcast, but I don't actually really know much about him at all.
All right, well, what's to say? He's the one of the greatest hockey players who ever lived, perhaps the greatest. Retired 10 years ago. Thereabouts.
Right.
And okay. That's all people care who are listening to the show. Yes. What people do care about is the fact that we recovered our back catalog.
Oh my goodness, yeah, this is absolutely epic, huge, major, mega news. And it's all thanks to long-term listener Eric G, who, I mean, I've known about him for quite a while and I've spoken to him a bit before, and he's a very cool guy. And he managed to recover every single missing episode, who then sent those episodes to Alex, and Alex uploaded each and every single episode to archive.org. So big thanks to Eric G for mailing the DVDs to Alex, and big thanks to Alex for uploading each and every single episode, which must have been quite a time-consuming process.
It took me a couple days, but it doesn't matter because we fucking got them back. What a relief. And, you know, when I was posting those shows, and by the way, while I was posting them, I managed to fix our... we had a problem where fucking iTunes, it wouldn't display more than 25 episodes because what we're... This is kind of going into the weeds, but we're using Blogger, and there was too much text and too much junk there that was cluttering up the feed, and it was causing too much, I guess, sort of interference. So anyway, so I made a new clean feed, so now we got all the episodes showing up in iTunes now, going way back. So that's beautiful, and it's all thanks to Eric. Man, you saved our ass. And I don't know if you recovered them or if you just had them all stored away. You know, it's funny that like there's a listener that had them stored, not us, but he had them all saved. And, oh, you saved our asses there, Eric, man. We owe you a million. Anything we can do, just tell us.
Yes, you gave the show new life, we can say, because to see that we've got very dedicated fans is fantastic, no pun intended.
And going back and listening while I was uploading them, listening to those old shows, like it's going back like 3 years. It's amazing how much stuff I forgot that we even talked about.
Right.
And it just sparks some memories. And I was going back when I was cleaning up the feed, I was trying to update the Blogger website too while I was at it with cleaning it up with some better links and stuff.
That's right. And you've actually made a separate page, which is more just for the feed than for anyone to actually visit because it's pretty bare bones. But it's Anime Pacific Classic. And that, you know, going up on YouTube, iTunes has got, apparently Anime Pacific has gone up a few levels, you know, when you type a search in for anime podcasts. So we've actually got a few new listeners out of this. Most prominent among them is someone who started following us in Twitter, who's a fellow called Manga Man, isn't it? Yeah, the Manga Man. And it's quite...
This guy's great. He Twitters constantly. And it's sort of funny. Like, you know, he's discovered us somehow. You know what? I don't think this is the first time anybody he Twittered us. And he was like, "Oh, I found you in I found you guys in iTunes." And you know, I couldn't believe it because, like, I don't think that's the first time anybody actually, I think, found us in iTunes.
Yeah. You know?
Like, I do a search for anime in iTunes, and I can't even find us in iTunes. You know?
Yeah.
So the fact that somebody else did, it's great.
Yeah. Right. Well, I think that's due largely to the fact that, you know, you re-uploaded the episodes, and that must have bumped it up or something. And, you know, approaching episode 100 is certainly quite a feat, and people see that and think, oh, okay, well, there's longevity here, because I do remember one fellow mentioning that whenever he looks for a new podcast, he will always check and see when the last episode was made and what episode number that was, you know, for longevity's sake, because...
Well, anyway, that's a very good point, you know, and the fact that, you know, we're still going, we try to get an episode every month. And we're going to hopefully get one out next week, too.
Right, well, you see...
That'll be episode 100.
Now,
go ahead.
I want to let everyone know about this. Episode 100 will have to be a special episode. And I'm going to take a page out of Fight Beat's book. And we're going to try and do that episode live via Stick'Em.
Yeah. I'm not sure this is a good idea.
I think it's
an
absolutely brilliant idea, and I'm really excited about it. And we can have people live, and it can be a live show, and it works pretty well for Fight Beat. So I think we're going to have to set a rock solid.
But you do the podcast in your boxer, so you know you're going to be like blinding people who turn into the.
Well, obviously, the weather's getting cooler, and I'll be wearing a t-shirt.
Yes.
Won't wear underpants. So, no, just kidding. No. So, I don't know. We should probably set a definite time for this. So maybe we can. I mean, I'll announce it on Twitter for anyone that's there. 7:30 Pacific Standard Time. I'm trying to, you know, make it easy for our American audience, who was probably the bulk of the audience of this show. But of course, anyone from around the world who is would like to join in to Stick'Em, it's very, very easy. And if you're one of those shy listeners that doesn't like to leave a message or anything, well, Stick'Em is good because you can just go and watch the feed, and you'll just be listed as a number. Basically, there are so many people listening, and if you want to actually join the chat, then you can just sign in and join the chat, and you can interact with me and Alex directly. Alex is buying a special poll, and he's taking requests, and we'll figure out some sort of credit card payment.
All right. I'll put a giant flag in the background or something. I don't know, man. I think this is a terrible idea, but
okay. Well, we'll see. I'm game. We'll see what the response to this episode is.
Anyway, what happens when we do this and like three people are listening? You know.
Well, I mean, that's the risk we have to take. But
so, I don't know. You actually use Stick'Em. The only person I know who uses Stick'Em is like Eric the Midget from the Howard Stern Show.
Right. Well, I don't exactly know who that is, but I discovered Stick'Em through Fight Beat, and he's been using it quite a few times, and it's worked out better for him. So I'm excited about this. And you can see me on webcam.
If for whatever crazy reason people don't want to tune in for a live episode, this will find its way onto our regular iTunes feed then?
I suppose you could say episode 100, if you're viewing through Stick'Em, you'll probably see the raw Anime Pacific. But for those of you that don't choose to see the show, then you'll get the... clean edited version where Alex isn't, you know, insulting Mexicans and stuff. So,
can I choose to only participate in the clean version?
So I don't know if Alex will, but I'm gonna turn on my webcam, And for each...
I'll turn it in. You can see my obese wife wandering around in the background.
Well, she is pregnant.
Yeah, well, that's what I meant. Yeah, by the way, my wife is like 7 months, 7 months pregnant. So which happily for the show means I'll get paternity leave when she gives birth in December. So
now that's awesome, because here in Hong Kong, paternity leave is just a myth.
Yeah, well, you're in the libertarian paradise of Hong Kong. So, but here I get 6 months paternity leave.
6 months.
So. Yeah. So, welcome to the socialist paradise of Canada. Yeah, 6 months paternity leave. And so will I be able to do weekly shows?
That's freaking awesome. 6 months. Oh.
Yeah. Well, keep in mind, though, you know, it's not like on a full salary, so I might not be sticking it out for the full 6 months because I got to make some bread, man. But, yeah.
Wow, that's...
But it means for us, it means our normal rigmarole of every weekend where I'm available and you're not, or you're available and I'm not, or whatever, it's going to be... That's going to be off for a few weeks anyway, minimum. So we'll have some more regular shows to do that will make our listeners happy. And like Manga Man there, who's... catching up very fast. He's listening like two I know I'm carrying on about this, but it's just so funny watching this guy. He's twittering constantly, and he's always talking about
the
shows.
I know, and he's quite passionate, so he'll be listening to these old episodes. And
that's the key thing. He's listening from the start.
Well, he's listening to the old ones, and then he was going back, didn't he say? Or is he going to the... He said he listened to the new ones. He liked it. Then he went back.
He listened to episode 98, and then he went back and started listening to episode 4, and right on to the beginning. So it's funny, like sort of twirling this guy sort of live. It's like going back in a time machine, and sort of he's like, "Oh, I can't believe Dane, you did this," and "Oh, I'm gonna..." What was the one thing he said? Oh. He said, "Oh, Dane, I'm gonna get a projector
too." That's
right.
I agree. I'm getting a projector. He said, and I was like, well, that was me in 2006, and I ended up, you know, I mean, I had no regrets about my projector, awesome, but, you know, I wanted a high-definition TV, the projector.
Technology has moved on since the projector
days. He does keep saying, oh, I totally agree about what you said in episode 14, but actually he said a great one just then, because I didn't even remember this, but he said, oh, Captain Bubby is on fire. That's my Skype username. In episode 24, because that was when I was talking about the Anime Pulse forum, and I said that anyone that says Huggles should not be convicted if someone gets killed and says Huggles. Yeah, so and I certainly agree with that. Okay. But at the same time,
it's great. It is. It's like going in a time machine.
But sometimes he'll say stuff that's like way ancient. We can't remember it. Like, I agree. Jimmy Hoffa is missing. Or I agree.
Lindbergh
baby won't come back. You know, it's...
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
I agree. Napoleon's war in Russia will be a failure.
That's right. It's not going to go well. Yeah.
So,
anyway, it is. It's like listening to our history of the show in sort of real time as he listens to each episode. So it is. It's amusing to follow.
Yes, it is.
But you can follow him too, the_MangaMan. He's on Twitter.
Also, yeah. since you re-upped that show on iTunes, I've been getting a few more followers on Twitter, which still isn't that much. It's 54.
Yeah, that's right. You did the how valuable is my Twitter feed thing, and you can't... It was like $8.
It was $15. Roger Ebert did it, and it was like $250,000, and I'm like, oh, okay, I'm worth a few grand, right? No.
Yeah, well, the funnier thing is, like, you know, who is it? It's like Jake or somebody did it, and he's like, oh, I'm worth 500, and I can just see you going, oh, well, if Jake is worth 500, I must be worth thousands. And Bubby does it, and it's like 13 cents. It's very... I wonder how they worked that out.
Yeah, I don't know. I tried to delete it, but that stupid thing, like, when you delete it, it'll just repost
it. So humiliating. Yeah, it's so humiliating that you wanted to get rid of it, but
exactly. It.
See, I figured, you know, I didn't want to take that risk. I saw people doing that, I'm like,
yeah, you made the right choice.
Well, I'm like, well, I only have 41 followers, and I'm pretty sure, like, you know, 30 of those are like spam bots.
Yeah, I actually make a point to delete the spam bots.
Hey, gang. Check out what other people have had to say about the Alpha Paddle podcast.
But anyway, it's all subjective, and
yeah,
it's pointless to argue about this. And then Kent from Upper Paddle will say, "Well, excuse me, but I think bobbity bobbity baba," and then it'll go on forever. Yeah.
Wait, that wasn't really that good. What else have people been saying about me? Kent is a prick.
Yeah. If you could, like, lock Kent in the bathroom or something, then it'd be fine.
Kent from Upper Paddle. Wow. I've been going for 3 years, and that's the best I can do. But if you're morbidly curious or just can't get enough of anime, video game, or movie podcasts, check me out at uppapaddle.com. That's UPAPADDLE.com. Or search for Upper Paddle in the iTunes directory. The Upper Paddle Podcast. Not really that good of a podcast.
Now that I'm at the website, I've got to get a little bit meta on something. In Regan's last show, which he just updated after like 4 months of inactivity, which is good, he actually mentioned how, you know, he visited China Smack and basically went in fetal position because it was non-stop depressing, sensationalized crap. And I do think that China Smack has really gone downhill, and China Hush is kind of where it's at now. Wouldn't you agree?
I would say that China Hush is more highbrow. It's still sort of tabloidy, but it's not as tabloidy as China Smack.
Yep.
Yes.
Well, yeah, I mean, because the thing with China Smack was, in the beginning, it was actually, you know, it had a good mix of good news, bad news, funny news, strange news. And it was more like, what do people in mainland China think of sort of events, both local and global? But now it's more kind of, you know, man rapes chicken or something.
It's, well, I'll read some. So it still is that. It still is translation of Chinese
right,
forms,
it is, yes.
Sensational Chinese stories. But now it's mostly stuff with. I'll read underground BDSM dungeon in Nanjing exposed online. Chinese girls without their makeup. Okay, well, that's fine. Snail houses. Poor Chinese coping with high housing prices. Well, that's not so bad. And then they carry on about scorpion food, boiled alive cat prepared in restaurants, caught wife cheating husband, wife catches husband having sex with mistress in car.
You see, now, other problems with China Smack is the fact that a lot of these things, or a substantial amount anyway, ended up being hoaxes.
Fake.
I'm pretty sure the boiled cat alive thing was a hoax. The mistress thing wasn't, I think, but there were quite a few other things that I remember that were just outright hoaxes, because what did they scour message boards and stuff, which, believe it or not, trolling is a global phenomenon. Mainland message boards get trolled just like anywhere else. So, yes.
Well, all right, but you know, I think the translation of the forum stuff is
yes,
still...
Yes, but I think they deliberately try to show you the best, the worst, and the average. Now they just seem to be going a little bit extreme. Well,
sensational.
It's over-sensationalized, and I don't like it anymore, so I replaced the link with...
I don't know. I still visit... I still visit it. I can't help myself.
Okay.
But, you know, it's like looking at a car crash or something. But you're right. China Hush is it's a good site. And
yeah.
I checked that too. It's online.
Because, you know, I got to reiterate to people, when I lived in China, I felt safer than I had anywhere else. Well, Hong Kong is super safe also. But I felt safer in the nighttime in, you know, relatively rural North China than I ever did in Sydney. Well, in my... parents' suburb, I felt safe, but in the city itself. Anyway, I'm rambling. But anyway, I went to Malaysia, my first trip to Malaysia. And I know Alex went to Malaysia before, but you didn't. Well, yeah. Anyway, everyone knows who has listened to the show for any length of time that I really didn't like Singapore very much.
Singapore was awesome.
No, I'm not going to be mean. There might be Singaporean listeners, but I didn't dig it. But Malaysia, I dug quite a bit, despite the fact that it is probably the most un-baby-friendly city, or sorry, country in the whole world. When I say un-baby friendly, actually, my baby got a lot of attention and all the Malaysians loved her. They were very nice to her. I mean, in terms of amenities, you know, you go to train stations and it's like the Untouchables. You know, the scene in the Untouchables where the woman's putting the pram up the stairs and Elliot Ness is in the shootout.
Okay, I'll take your word.
You go to these train stations and, you know, only about a fifth of them actually has any lifts or anything, and the escalators are turned off. So I'm lugging the whole stroller up the stairs, and oh, that was pretty difficult. The weather was better than Singapore, which I was surprised about, because Singapore was just, you know, if you listen to, you know, that very excellent Best of Anime Pacific clip that Alex put there, which was also done in part by Jake the Root Beer King. Big thanks to him.
Oh, yeah, I forgot to say that. Yes, thank you.
I'm talking about wearing my wife's underwear.
It's amazing what gems I found when I was digging through those old clips.
That was because the awful, terrible 365-day-a-year weather in Singapore just whittled my thighs away until I couldn't walk. And I just had to walk like John Wayne. Welcome to Singapore, pilgrim. But so I had to. I discovered. I don't want to be too graphic, but if I kind of placed my testicles in the right spot and wore my wife's underwear, I could get through okay. It was like my scrotum had gout. Even wind would just make me roll on the floor in agony. But anyway, that's.
But by the way, if they want to hear more of that, they have to go back and listen to episode 18. That's where that is. That's one of our best episodes ever.
Episode 18, you say?
Episode 18. That's one of our best episodes ever, because that has your admission that you wear women's underwear story. It also has where Connie spews the truth that you love watching Japanese porn. I believe that also has the clip where you admit to having tentacle sex in the bed. That's all there, episode 18.
Which is called Beware of Velcro Swimming Shorts.
Yeah, I pulled a lot of my clips from that episode, actually. while I'm at it, let me just throw out a couple more classics. Episode 21, Chisneyland. That's where you tell the story of you visiting the Chinese Funland with Indiana Jones style. The mind cards, that's right. Episode 23 is the episode 24 is your famous toilet story where you push that poor fellow in the sewage trench.
Oh, you know.
And episode 28 is the Hong Kong special. So let me just throw those four must listen to episodes.
I'm just looking at the show notes for the aforementioned episode 18, and I'm looking at the Chisneyland one. Sorry, and I see a comment by David Lee, and I totally forgot about that guy. He was one of our regular emails and listeners, and I just noticed that. As soon as the Tales from Asia started to dwindle and I talked about my penis less, David Lee mysteriously became absent. So he's part
listening.
Of the Dane's penis demographic, which we'll have to bring back. Maybe for the webcam episode.
Yes. Oh, God.
So, but anyway, yeah, Malaysia, great, absolutely great food. Very nice place. I mean, I was just in Kuala Lumpur. I was really impressed by it, and I enjoyed it quite a bit.
You get hassled by any fake Buddhist
No, I
monks.
Didn't, actually, believe it or not. I mean, and I think this just bears reiterating, for any people who travel to Asia or anywhere, if you see a monk on the street who asks you for money, they must, without a shadow of a doubt, be fake. No Buddhist monk will ever, ever, ever approach you for money, ever. It's just these lazy-ass guys who just put on a monk suit and shave their head and then go around asking for money. It is fundamentally against their religion to go out busking for money. So anyway, so Malaysia was good. Good food.
Yeah, well, when I went, I don't know if I said this before, but when I went to Kuala Lumpur, that's where I got both Kara and I came out with wicked food poisoning.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't get any of that.
Really? I don't know what caused it. Maybe it was the 8-hour, for some stupid reason, I decided to cheap out, and I took a bus from Singapore to Kuala Lumpur, which is 8 hours, and we stopped once at this sort of off of the highway sort of rest area. With this really sort of crappy sort of Malaysian, not sort of local fast food, but you know, not quite. And we had our lunch there, and I didn't eat anything. All I ate was like M&M's or like M&M's or something for breakfast. So that, and then eating whatever the crap I had at that rest stop, really like laid us both down. Actually,
that's right.
For, like,
and you
the
were,
next
you
two
were
days,
losing so, your guts, yeah, and the monks were still approaching you while you. Intestines.
Yeah, well, despite the fact that Kara and I were both crippled with food poisoning, we decided, okay, we're in Kuala Lumpur. We're only here for 2 days. We got to go see at least the Petronas Towers, which at the time were still the tallest
right,
buildings
yep.
in the world. So we tried to stagger our way down to Petronas Towers. We got like halfway there, and we got like hassled by these Buddhist monks, you know, begging us for money. And meanwhile, like I'm like clutching my stomach and I'm heaving into this paper bag, and still these monks are, you know, holding out their money palms. Please give me money, you know. Fuck, it's shameless.
Yep. I'll tell you anyways. Another thing. You always hear, you know, oh, you know, you should learn Mandarin. It's an international language. Blah 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 blah. But in Kuala Lumpur. Cantonese got me everywhere.
Sorry, I just read your Twitter.
Can you read it out?
That's classic. Yeah, okay, I'll be Jake. So Jake the Root Beer King says in Twitter, I know people don't give a shit about this, but anyway, Jake the Root Beer King says, I just found out that during the Nara period, Japanese wiped their asses with wooden sticks. I am baffled. Then you say,
just too different from the phallic round sticks you use, right?
Anyway, for more hilarity like that, follow Dane on Twitter, Captain Bubby, at Captain Bubby. And I'm also there at Alex _ Annie Pack. Yes.
That's right. Ah, yes, Twitter fun. Yeah, Cantonese could got me everywhere. At least, you know, with the Chinese population, of which there is a lot.
Well, that's interesting. I figured they'd speak Mandarin.
No, pretty much every no. In fact, without any exception, every single Chinese person I met, which you know they it seems most of the shop owners are Chinese, could speak Cantonese. So and it's funny, you know, everywhere I've gone with the Chinese population, Cantonese has been much more useful. I think Mandarin's more useful if you're just in the mainland. So,
yeah, well, it's the same thing. You go to Vancouver, they're all speaking
right,
Cantonese too.
Yeah.
In the summer of 2008, a man named Fightbait started an anime podcast.
I watched Grenadier because of the tits.
And it was terrible. 2 years later,
maybe his penis is the duck.
I don't know how you would put that in a woman.
Fightbait.com may still suck ass, but we're bringing you more content than ever. If you head over to the website, you can now find news, reviews, editorials, pictures of dogs, and more crappy podcasts than your ears can handle. You even have the option to subscribe to the podcast, the blog, or both. Fightbait.com, kicking ass on the internet for 2 years and counting, proving that quantity is better than quality.
I want to talk about Redline.
Right, yes. I'm certainly looking forward to that. Looks awesome.
So if you don't know, Redline is a, it's an anime, obviously.
Madhouse, my favorite studio.
And it's by Madhouse. And it's been in development for like six years. And it's finally come out. It's being released in the States, or I should say shown in the States, in a few select cinemas. So if you're in San Francisco or, you know, New York, if you dig around, I'm sure you can find it's being shown in some one of your local art house cinemas. I'm completely out of luck here where
I am.
It's a
shame because something like this deserves to be seen on, you know, the biggest screen possible.
Yeah, like I there hasn't been any, like I haven't heard of this before. The only reason I know of it is because of sites like Colony Drop that have been sort of pimping this. But the actual people who have the rights, which is Manga Entertainment, you go to their website, there's nothing about this. You wouldn't even know this movie exists. I don't understand why they're not promoting it at all. You know, you go to that website, Manga Entertainment, there's nothing about Redline. I did a search. It's a terrible website they got going there. If you want to find anything, you get this terrible interface. You got to scroll through like box covers to see what you're looking for. But it's, yeah, there's nothing about it. And it's too bad because you should see that this Colony Drop article is really excited about it. He calls it sort of a return to, you know, sort of classic 90s anime.
Yeah, that's the feeling I got.
You know, no moe bullshit. It's an old school movie. Variety said, I trust sort of Variety is more of an independent source. They basically, you know, gave it a positive review, saying that it's visually spectacular, but the, you know, one negative point is maybe the script. You know,
I don't think the script really matters in the case of a movie like this.
Yeah, well, exactly. You know, they said, you know, if you're already a fan of this genre, like anime or action films, you'll like it. But if you're somebody who likes Miyazaki or something, you're probably not going to be interested.
Right, yeah.
But I highly recommend reading this Colony Drop article because you know, there's some, he makes a, he's a brilliant rant, you know. he goes on about mostly a lot of this isn't even about Redline. It's about, he's complaining about, you know, the current state of anime, and he's, you know, goes on nostalgically for 90s you know, 90s shows like here, I'll read a bit here. I'm not going to read the whole thing, just read a couple paragraphs. Redline is a bizarre amalgamation of Hanna-Barbera's wacky racers crossed with a European comic sense of style and attention to detail that we all assumed the Japanese animation industry forgot sometime in the early 2000s. The animation, the characters, and design work are all worthy of unrestrained praise. But perhaps the most important aspect of the film is the way it makes you feel. The first 15 minutes of Akira, the first time you saw huge, glorious animated beast, the first extra gory decapitation you saw in a cartoon. Redline works on this level, not because it's overtly sexual or hyperviolent, but because it'll excite you in the same way Japanese animation probably hasn't excited you in the last 10 years. It triggers your reptilian response to awesome shit and reminds you of the cartoons that you gave up on ever seeing made again. That's not to say Redline is an inherently old-school production. It doesn't grovel at the feet of older fans like Lacrosse Frontier, and it doesn't act as an apology to a forgotten fan base like Gundam Unicorn. Instead, it'll make you feel like you're 15 again. You've just cracked open this door to the unfathomable world of Japanese cartoons, and you're pretty sure this is the coolest shit ever.
That speaks to me on so many levels.
I'll just read one more paragraph. I just love this article. The age of the sweeping science fiction animation film is over, buried in a pile of maids, adorable younger sisters, and bullshit purple robots. and we all assumed that there would never be another movie like Venus Wars, Pat Labor, or Do You Remember Love? But Redline, in its own way, is just like Ninja Scroll. I don't know why Ninja Scroll. It's just like Ninja Scroll, which kicked you square in your pimply teenage face and showed you that beyond the boring, lame Saturday morning American cartoons you grew up with was this world of hyper-detailed robot battles, chicks with huge boobs, and blood, and goddamn cartoons. Yes. Anyway, this goes on and on and on. It's a friggin' awesome article. It's a great, glorious rant. It's a must read at Colony Drop.
Yeah,
He nailed it so well. I know I've told the story 1,000 times, but you know, God, I just because it was so like affecting to me when I first like, Akira was the like for him, like he describes it was that my first true anime, you know, not excluding Robotech, you know, whatever, but you know, or you know, Gatchet,
right.
You know, the Americanized version. This is my first true anime, and my friend, I didn't even really understand what it was. You know, anime, what the hell, you know, I didn't have any concept. In the early 90s, maybe 91, 92, my friend brought over this VHS tape he rented, and he said, Alex, you got to watch this. It's a cartoon. I'm like, a cartoon? I don't want to watch a cartoon. It's a cartoon, but you're going to love it. You know, it's going to blow you away. And he put it in there, put the VHS tape in, And yeah, the first 15, I was blown away. Like I said, the first 15 minutes just kicks you in the arse. And it's like, holy shit, what else out there is like this?
How could the guy that was with you see the film if he was blowing
empty
you away?
Geist.
I didn't get it.
Quiet. But no, then we went out and rented Empty Geist, which I don't know, not as good, obviously, but you know, at the time, it was still, even that was better than, you know.
I just remember, Akira, also the first real anime I saw, and how that just blew me away. And I remember a few years later when I went to America, which had a lot more anime stuff that the UK or Australia did at the time. And I think Australia, in 1995, Australia didn't have any. Oh, wait, yes, it did. It started to have sort of local anime, local releases. But before then, I'd have to import them from overseas. And I'd go to all the comic shops, and one of them gave me this big catalog. And I would just look through the catalog every day, memorizing the names of the different anime in there and just imagining what they'd be like.
But what was the first one that you saw? Do you remember?
And then the second proper anime was Dominion Tank Police, which I love Tank Police, which is kind of funny because when I first and I talked about this, I actually reviewed Dominion Tank Police, and it's one of the reviews that I'm actually proud of, which is strange. It was the first. It would cost $45 Australian dollars, which is a lot of money for a VHS tape. It was just one OVA episode, 50 minutes long or something. It was imported from the UK, and at the time, my pocket money was $5 a week Australian. So it took me like 2.5 months thereabouts to save up for this, and I was expecting, you know, state-of-the-art animation and epic mech motorbike races and stuff. And while Tank Police is awesome, it wasn't Akira 2.0 or whatever I was expecting.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, I remember seeing that too in the 90s. You know, I was like you, I was looking for anything I could get. I'd go to where university, they have every Saturday, they have the anime club. There's nowhere else to get it. Like the internet was barely functional.
Yeah.
Right, okay. So, you know. So I mean, I don't know how how they were getting, but I was going to the anime club, and you know, they somehow obtained these fan subs. You sit there for 4 hours, suffering through crap like shonen shows, but shoujo shows, just to watch the one or two shows you really wanted to see, you know. This fellow seems to think that Redline's not going to make any money.
No, that's kind of what I thought too. I thought it's too good to make any money.
Yeah, here's what he says. I'm going to quote him again here. The truth is that in Japan, movies like Redline will tank, and people will spend their money on the Harui movie and the 48th One Piece film instead. And maybe that's okay, because Redline isn't made for otaku. The losers who line up every year for Comic for a kamiket or religiously follow Naruto every week can't handle something this different. It would kick them on their ass hard enough that they'd run back to their hug pillows and pastel color schemes. So fuck those guys and fuck that Bleach fanboy, you know, who will refuse to see it because it doesn't look Japanese enough. Show it to your friends who give up on anime when they realized everything after Cowboy Bebop was gay. Anyways, yeah, it continues on. God. So I wonder...
Basically, beg
Fregan, whoever's releasing this in the States, in the cinemas, I don't know if it's Manga Entertainment, but beg them to show Redline as wide as possible. It's been in San Francisco, and that's the only theater that I... You know, really, I'm sure. I think in Texas too, at some anime convention. So it's been in San Francisco and Texas. How about, you know, opening it in L.A., New York, Vancouver, Toronto? Fuck. It's depressing that, you know, we knew who they need. They need Carl Maxit to come back. He knew how to promote. I know this is going to sound crazy, but you listen to that interview with Carl Maxit that Anime News Network did. Did you hear
no,
that?
No.
It's like a two-hour-long interview. Maybe not 2 hours, but it was an extremely long interview with Carl Maysek. And it goes on. He carries on with this point, how the problem with the anime in the 2000s was, you know, they didn't take the time to promote the really good the good properties that rose above the sea of shit. They because they always needed cash flow, the studios that licensed them. They couldn't take the time to properly build up the promotion, to properly do a wide theatrical release, to build up hype for a film. This needs a little bit of Carl Maysek attention. It's got to follow his prescription, the proper promotion, proper release in theaters across. Doesn't have to be 3,000 screens, but you know, like Maysek did for his films in the 90s. You know, indie cinemas across the country. Proper promotion, and then hype it up a bit, then release the DVD in the States. And it deserves that kind of attention, but it's probably not going to get it.
Unfortunately, even Miyazaki's films don't get that attention, probably because Disney doesn't want people to realize that he's better than them. But, it's unfortunate. Also, did you hear, this is also kind of related to Colony Drop, because they talked about this too, how... Crunchyroll are dropping honorifics from their subtitles, and the fanboy.
That's a huge controversy.
Because what sort of a loser cares? Oh no, it doesn't say sama anymore when I speak to the other person. Oh, it's just lost the translation. Oh, that's it. I'm down. That's it. Crunchyroll's dead to me. Dead.
Yeah, I know. It's so fucking retarded. And first of all, if you care that much about it, first of all, you probably understand enough Japanese to hear the honorific when they're saying it. You know, it doesn't need to be in the fucking subtitle. No, if you can hear
it's
it.
Actually, it,
you know,
it,
you know.
It's kind of done to for those anime fans that know like three words of Japanese and think they're just super hot shit.
But even those people know, like they can listen and they hear, you know, Senja Nohara sama. They can hear the sama and they can hear the person's name. And they're not dim enough. You know, even those dim bulbs realize that, you know, can hear the sama or hear the sama. They hear the honorific being spoken and they understand what, like the people who don't know what that means. You know, they're not going to care this in the subtitle, and they're not going to understand it when he speaks it anyway. You know, they're not going to be watching Crunchyroll anyway. The people that don't know what that means won't be able to understand it. So it's pointless. The whole controversy is that, you know, what a bunch
you
of
know,
bullshit.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it's just another example of, you know, in a way, it's kind of like there's a lot of dogs in my apartment complex, which a lot of apartment complexes in Hong Kong forbid. Pets, and now I kind of see why.
Oh yeah, I forgot. You used to have a dog, didn't you? Didn't you let him? You know, you got tired of cleaning up after him, and you just sort of threw him out into a park someplace.
No. I ate him. He was yummy. No, No.
That's right. It was, I knew it was either that or ate him.
That's actually quite a sad story because we really liked the dog a lot.
But he was too much trouble and you didn't want to clean up after him, so you let him loose in the local Korean district.
There's actually a Korean market just downstairs, actually. We basically sold him to someone for more than we got him for. So, you know,
Actually.
It's just that Hong Kong is no place, I think.
Well, why didn't you think of that before you got the dog? She saw the dog in the pet store window.
More or less, yeah. Then she realized that they actually poo.
She's like a 12-year-old. Yeah.
But, you know, the thing is, I actually really like dogs, but I don't like dog owners. And let me reiterate that there is a difference between people who own a dog and dog owners. Dog owners are the kind of people that call their dog their baby. Oh, I have two children. Oh, okay. And are they in school yet? No, one's a Labrador and one's a German Shepherd. Oh, shut up. And there's those people. It's a big thing happening now. I don't know if this is an Asian phenomenon or a Hong Kong phenomenon or if it's global, but people are buying prams for their dogs.
Oh my God. Well, you know what it is. It's the fact that people aren't having kids anymore. It's the declining. So they're substituting like their pets for their children instead.
In doing so, you're actually doing more harm to the pet than good because dogs should run around and have fun and burn energy. That's what they like to do. And if you're putting them in strollers and you know, hand feeding them lasagna or something, well, I got no patience for people like that. And I kind of feel the same way about a lot of anime fans now. You know, they're just so different to what I was, and the stuff they like is so different. It's
I have seen the Gundam Unicorn, which I didn't want to watch at first because I thought it would be fruity, because it has a totally fruity title. Don't you think? You know, I was like, you know, if I listen to this, I'll end up, I don't know, coasting a show with Binu, you know.
This is coming from the man that used to brag to me about Hana Yoridengo or whatever.
Hana Yoridengo, that was the anime I had to sit through at the anime club. I couldn't remember the name of that title. That was the Jose show I had to sit through at the anime club in order to watch the, you know, less torturous stuff. But anyways, yes, I'm sorry, Binu. I didn't mean that. But anyways, yeah, I watched Gundam Unicorn, and I saw Eve no Jikan. Which, for whatever reason, before I watched it, I didn't want to see it because I got confused with Kodomo no Jikan. And I was like, oh, that's that Jikan show. I don't want to fucking watch that. That's a pedophile show.
Duo Matrix gave that, you know, 5 stars.
That's right. yes, indeed. You probably did, yeah. But
you
no,
really did.
But it's,
really...
it's not because Jikan just means... He
really
did.
I don't even know if Binu has the episode anymore, but he actually said, despite the controversy, it's a really good show.
Yeah. Oh my God. The Duo Matrix, man. That's another thing. Going back, listening to those old shows, I fucking forgot all about that. Duo Matrix. And I highlighted every, like, at least for the first 20 episodes or something, every time I had a significant Duo Matrix appearance, I put a Duo Matrix tag in the show notes for that website. And Bina was like, he Twittered, are you guys heard of the Duo Matrix show or something? But it's so irresistible because I remember he posted that NPR podcast. It was like an episode, it was like 21 of the show. I was, you know, going back through it, and it was like episode 21, and we for and he yeah so he so so Dual Matrix decided to do this NPR show where he was doing a demo tape basically for the NPR, which is National Public Radio in the States. He's demoing, trying to become a broadcaster, NPR broadcaster, and he had to create this demo and he posted it on the NPR website.
Oh, and I'm going to post that on the end of this episode.
Yeah, I'm digging through. I'm madly trying to find this. See, at the time though, we had just I found it. Episode 23.
Yep.
Episode 23, if you want to hear the us discussing it. But then again, we didn't actually discuss it because we just for previous like 10, 15, 13 episodes, actually, we had been sort of razzing on Dual Matrix pretty heavily. And we had just done, Binu and Dual Matrix had done guest appearances on our show. So off air, we were like listening to this and... I don't even know if I should say this still 3 years after the event, but we were sort of snickering because and you listen to this stuff and of course you got the Dual Matrix voice who sounds like Scott and he's like he does this so serious. At one point,
hopefully you will be able to turn on the radio and hear my sultry yet high male voice coming out of your speaker talking about what radio does.
There it is.
That's right. I want to do a show on the culture that is geek. But don't worry, the show won't have a simple geek for the host. Oh no, it will be headed by a wisecracking, intelligent, and fast-thinking geek. Now, you may have never met a cool geek until you have met me, at least according to my friends. Now, the whole reason that I want to have my own show is to spread the love that I have for all things geek, from anime to movies.
He says anime.
Of course, I have an ulterior motive in that I would love for the show to help me get a career in voice acting. Ever since I was a little kid, one thing has fascinated me more than that of animation.
I feel guilty.
And that is voice.
I feel guilty.
For me, voice is an important thing. Just by hearing one's voice, you can tell whether they are angry, happy, or even sad. You could even tell if they are disgusted.
I've got tears in my eyes now.
And because voice is such an important thing,
I feel bad. In a way. But if Binu's okay with it, I'm sure.
I'm sure Binu's fine with it.
I don't know.
Now, just one last thing. Did you like that picture of Renka Lee I posted in episode 98?
Oh my god!
I love that picture.
Right, Dane. The Colony Drop guy called it Moe Cross Frontier. It is everything that is terrible about the current anime trends is epitomized in Renka Lee right there, turning the classic Minmay into a Moe style 12-year-old.
Just out of curiosity, have you finished watching Macross Frontier?
No, I can't. It's just so bad. I just can't go back to it. It's hard, man. I gotta go back and watch the rest of that. For the few moments of greatness that are in that show, you gotta put up with a lot of crap. And you know what? I got too much other stuff to watch that's better, like that G-Con show there. What the
G-Con.
What is it again? Eve No G-Con. Right, Time of Eve. I'll just say it in English. Time of Eve, which was awesome. You know, I got that to watch. I got to put up with Macross Frontier. I bailed on that zombie anime, and I bailed on. There was a huge gap in episodes of that for that Shiki show. Like there was like they released episode 11, then like 12 came out like finally like 4 weeks after, just recently, you know. So I'm sort of it's almost too much trouble. It's hardly worth it for me to go back. I got so much stuff to watch right now that it's hard to catch up on everything. You know what? I'm watching this Gundam show. It makes me want to go back and watch the original. The original series and go through in order, you know, for the Universal Century timeline.
I was actually thinking about that too, and having like a month of Gundam special or something. But
it's just so much time. Well, you see, for me, time consuming.
I've always had issues with
especially when you're trying to undertake watching everything. I would skip, you know, Double Z Gundam, which is considered very very shown.
I mean, all of them have been squashed into movies anyway. The original Gundam, and then of course the rest are OVAs. Zed Gundam has been made into three movies too. I started to watch Zed Gundam, and as usual, for the first few episodes, I'm like, oh yeah, this is great. And then the pacing started to go all over the place, and I thought, you know what, if it's getting this sort of difficult to, if I have to sort of sigh when I start to watch something, then I probably shouldn't be watching it. So,
yeah. That's it. So you sort of sort of fall off and you bail, you know. And it's like, in a way, you're almost better off just sticking to the OVA. You know, watch like War. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I've seen the first of the three films based on the Gundam TV series, and I really enjoyed the first one, so I think cutting out all the unnecessary crap and putting it into a movie was a very good idea, and it works well that way. So I'll probably end up, you know, watching the original Gundam films, and then I'll just watch the films, the OVAs, and the film version of Zed. And
yeah, that's probably a good idea, because you almost, I don't want to go into the review, but you almost have to do that in order to watch
Unicorn,
new series. Yeah, I mean, there are so many, like, I've seen them all, but it's been so long. Like, I'm like there are all these references, eh? And I'm only probably catching, like, half of them. And even those ones that I catch, oh, they're referring to something in the old series. Who is that again? You got to go back. You got to do a wiki search for, like, names. You know, they throw out these terms. Okay, what's that again? I'm constantly referring to Wikipedia, pausing the movie, going up, the checking on the internet. Oh, yeah, right. You know, refreshing my memory. It really is for, like, the hardcore Gundam fan that they're going to, like, you know, joygasm. But if you're, like, if you're, like, new to the series or, like, a casual fan, you're, like, you're going to be confused, man. You have to watch it, like, two or three times just to know what's going on.
Actually, on other Gundam news, the Gundam 00 film came out, which was the first Gundam film to deal with, first of any Gundams to deal with aliens. Now that alone got me excited, because I have to admit, I like aliens, and I like stuff with aliens. I like, you know, space opera with aliens, but
and hentai with tentacle aliens.
Maybe I'll check one out one day, but I'm just not educated enough on the subject to talk about. But with so this Gundam 00 film, I thought, oh, finally, aliens. Okay, that's going to be cool. I mean, even if they were cliched, sort of pointy-eared, elfish people, I wouldn't mind. But it turns out they are the most boring of boring aliens imaginable, which is just like this sort of goopy mass that just changes its shape. I suppose it's easier to make, you know, CGI goopy masses that... It's basically like this sludge or something like that that morphs into different shapes. So the aliens...
Yeah, you know, and the reviews gotten pretty bad. I haven't read a lot of reviews, but the ones that I saw were not
the same.
Exactly thrilled by the movie.
And I just can't get myself interested in a non-Universal Century Gundam anyway. Apparently Gundam Seed, the original, was apparently excellent. And a lot of people who were... elaborate. Gundam Seed, a lot of people thought was excellent. And then Gundam Seed Destiny, the sequel, apparently just tore the franchise apart and is just so amazingly terrible and crap and does so many things wrong. But at the same time, it's apparently the best-selling of all the Gundams ever. So this goes to show that...
Who knows what people's taste, eh? I remember one of my students in Hong Kong, who was, you know, he was like 12 years old. He was making a giant Gundam Seed a model. He had a, nobody cares. But anyways, he had a big Gundam from Gundam Seed. He was like, he was putting it together like, God, you know, boy, that's some dedication, man. I'd never be able to. Oh, yeah, it reminds me. Listen to those old shows. I had forgotten that you had decided to go into the figurine collecting business. And I want to know whatever happened to that. Because last we heard from you, you had just bought some paint, and you were about to, you had, your goal was to intricately paint the panties on your upskirt figurine there. And I believe it was black with, you had to go black with a white lace trim. So whatever happened to that, I suppose you abandoned it after
pretty
woken
much,
up blotchy. as Homer says, you tried something and
so
it was too
doing,
difficult.
Yes.
So that's right. That's right. And so it wasn't worth doing. The lesson is don't try. That's a mangled the quote there, but
yeah, and also the other reason was for pretty much a pittance more than what I paid for the raw materials. I saw one that was just amazingly painted, because apparently, you know, they there's people that assemble these things and then send them to China and just get, you know, a building full of people to paint them, and they do a very good job of doing so. So I realized, well, you know, what am I wasting hours for when I could just, because I think
the idea is, you're supposed to get joy
out
of it.
I'm not one of those people
painting it yourself, I believe.
I'm one of those people that didn't buy Warhammer because they weren't already colored. If you could buy Warhammer figurines that were already colored, then I might have been a Warhammer nerd as a kid.
Yeah. Me too, actually.
And also.
But if you do it yourself, you can choose the color of all the clothing and underwears and whatnot. No?
No. No, it's actually a Haruhi Suzumiya. One, it was a business decision, because I thought, I thought, oh, you know, this thing will sell for heaps. Right now, I'd be lucky to sell it for scrap.
I don't know I don't know what gave you the idea. You had a talent for paint.
I don't know. I don't know.
So you gave up on that after that one?
Pretty much,
attempt,
yeah.
Did you?
I just discovered that, you know, I like to express myself creatively, but in a computer, at least in a computer, you can press Control Z if the paint doesn't work out. But I kept...
That's right, eh? So anyway, thank you for that update. That's calling back to like episode four, like very
that's
early
right.
episodes. We're talking 4 through 10 there. You were going on about your figurine and your... And your transformation into an otaku.
Yes.
Hardcore otaku.
Yes, I'm afraid it didn't work out. And you know, I was just listening the other day to I think it was the episode where we reviewed or where I reviewed Gintama. Now this episode is relevant because that Gintama review made me sound really kind of intelligent, and there weren't many sort of gaps or pauses. And the reason that was is because we were still recording in the old way back then. You know, we'd record with one of those Skype call recorder things, and it was recorded at like 22/100 hertz instead of 42/200 hertz or whatever it is, And I had pasted that into our show, which should be 44,000 hertz. So this 22,000 hertz stream basically became kind of a little bit faster and chipmunky. If you listen to the review, yeah, we're both basically both chipmunks for that show, that episode. But it ends up being a really wonderful review because I haven't had lunch and it's 2 o'clock, so I think it's time we bid adieu until next week for our very exciting episode, which we will start recording at 7:30 Eastern Standard Time, 7:30 p.m. So you finish your dinner early, go and listen to the show. Girls, bring some tissues. It's going to be a wild, wild ride, hopefully. And with this stick 'em thing, We can actually...
Yeah.
And if you're a listener and you want to speak to us through webcam, you can actually add someone to the other. There's four webcam feeds. So I would be on one, Alex would be on the other, and, you know, two other people could come in. We could, and you can actually, like...
If you're a... if yeah, especially if you're a hot chick and you want to flash us or
That's
something,
right.
Please come up on Stick'Em.
And
yes.
You can actually broadcast videos and stuff through Stick'Em, so I should try and do that. I mean, I'm just afraid that I prepare all this stuff and then it's Grandma Mabel online and no one else.
But, you know, Stick'Em is... Stick'Em, I think, is... They have content restrictions, eh? So you have to be G-rated on there, I believe.
Judging by what I've heard on the Fight Beat show, yes.
Okay, I see. Maybe they just haven't been reported,
I
don't know.
Maybe for explicit content, you've got to actually sign in. If you, I don't know. No, but then again, no, you don't need to, because I...
Okay, anyway, we're boring our audience. Yes. We'll work all that over this week. Keep track on, follow us on Twitter if you're that curious. Check our website, animepacific.blogspot.com, where we have the show notes and a link to download the show.
You can also email us at animepacific@gmail.com.
That's right. And please review us on iTunes. That's one way of getting our ranking higher on there. If we've got more reviews, that's one surefire way of attracting
right, yes.
more listeners. Even if you dislike us, you know, I think as long as people review the show, that gets us higher on the rankings.
Yes.
So,
you know, it's funny. A lot of people, or some people who listen to the first episode, they think, what the hell? And then they listen to the second and the third, and somehow it's like the Church of Scientology. We're just crap, but we've got special methods to
get
people.
Yeah, we keep getting these emails... That's right. Where people like listen and they realize, well, this show is kind of terrible. But then they sort of gradually, somehow they keep getting sucked into listening to one more and one more, and they gradually just sort of
they've
grow
yeah,
on them.
They become
like
acclimatized
like
to
something.
Our madness. So,
yes.
Okay. So anyway, 100th episode coming up. Very exciting. Please post some comments at the website and let us know that you will be there for this live show to let us know it's worth it. Or email us also if you don't want to leave a message in the in our message area of at the Anime Pacific website.
So until next time in our 100th episode spectacular.
Bye-bye.
Adieu. Bye-bye.
Love, danger, desire, cobra is the master, caught in a crossfire, cobra loves the danger. Flock to his side.
You've probably heard about, Alex, is the issue of the oil well, you know, Japan and China, and then this Chinese fishing boat got arrested. And
The islands. So now, those Japanese islands that, you know, China is, I don't know, China like claims like every island in the Pacific, basically, you know, one of our former emperors farted in the general direction of this island, therefore it is ours. You know, every scrap of territory in the Pacific that, you know, somehow China's manufactured a claim to. So anyway, yeah. So basically, a Chinese fishing boat got detained by the Japanese Coast Guard, because they were fishing, obviously, in Japanese waters, at which, you know, China has claimed, like they do everything
else. I don't know if it's because of the fact that you lived in Japan, you got a Japanese wife, but you're approaching this from the Japanese perspective.
Well, of course, but not only that. I know that not even exaggerating. Like, there are all these islands in the East China Sea that, you know, China just suddenly has discovered in the last 50 years that they have ancient historic ties to, because, you know, either that they've discovered because of resources in the area, or, you know, fish or whatever, you know, they just manufacture these claims. And in the 70s, bloody China went to war with Vietnam because over claims to some islands that Vietnam has. You know, these are islands that are like off the coast of Vietnam. They're clearly like, you know, Vietnamese, but oh no, China has those too. So Mao invaded in like the late 70s. You know, it's ridiculous. This is going back, you know, 30, 40 years. China's, you know, been carrying on like this. This is just another in a long line of, you know, territory claims. And and they got their panties in a bunch. The Japanese Coast Guard detained these. If anything, the bloody Japan has got to stick up for itself. It got to put up with this bullshit from the Chinese. But, you know, they cave like a cheap suit.